Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, August 28th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this Tuesday edition of the show. Two phenomenal guests join me. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're going to chat NFL preseason week four, maybe throw out a couple of college football thoughts, and then focus on the Dell Technologies Championship, the second event here of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Second half of today's show, we'll have Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com. All college football with Ralph here today. We'll go over five games in deep detail, some of these by listener request. And then we'll do Ralph's first edition of the Pick Six. We've been doing that with Kyle Hunter and Brad Powers. We'll go ahead and get Ralph in on the fun here on today's program. First and foremost, I want to apologize to our listeners for how yesterday's show cut off. My internet temporarily kicked out when I was going through some Major League Baseball thoughts, so that's why we had the abrupt end to the show yesterday. My sincere apologies for that. Fortunately, it didn't happen when we talked football with Kyle Hunter, so make sure that you go back and check out that segment. You can find that over at bangthebook.com. Great place to find it. Spreaker, iTunes, Stitcher, we're all over the place out there. Very easy to find Bang the Book Radio, the full shows, and also the segments, of course. Look, these segments still have great shelf life because we talk about a lot of games, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday here throughout the weeks. So good opportunity for you to catch up on what you've missed, and we make it very easy for you to find all of those archived shows and segments. Also over at bangthebook.com, don't forget to check out our contests. Our Bang the Book Super Contest will start next week. Our College Super Contest will start this week, so make sure that you get involved in both of those. NHL previews rolling out from Parker Michaels. They are fantastic. Today, Vancouver Canucks got posted. Yesterday, the Montreal Canadiens. So make sure that you follow along with those as he gets those up. My MLB picks and tips piece updated for today. We'll have golf, UFC, NASCAR, all kinds of stuff throughout the week over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. And finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. To sign up using that promo code BANG100, you get 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. Redesigned look over there looks fantastic. Make sure that you sign up over there at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here on the program today. The first, Mr. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How you doing, bud?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time as always here, Brian. And let's go ahead and start right away here with week four of the NFL preseason. All 32 teams playing on Thursday night. Obviously, the NFL season kicks off a week from Thursday, so we're certainly looking forward to that with Atlanta taking on Philadelphia. But, Brian, a lot of backups, practice squad guys, dudes fighting for a job here this week. What is your approach to week four of the preseason?
Watch something else. That's all right, plain and simple. The preseason was good to me. I enjoyed it. I think there were legitimate handicapping angles. This week four, though, turns into a real gong show, Adam. There's some things that have changed, generically speaking, how some of these coaches have approached preseason. Some things that remain, like in Buffalo, they've yet to name a starting quarterback. Now, I don't know if McCarron's going to get a little work here. He missed week three. If that was truly an open competition, Nathan Peterman's won the job. He was sensational in preseason. But in the first half of these last two games, Buffalo's starting offensive line got absolutely mauled by Cleveland and by Cincinnati. Here, they're all excited. Josh Allen's going to be the starter, and this poor kid was a crash test dummy. And then very easy. Everyone says, oh, the kid's not ready. Well, he was running for his life. They can run block, but they can't pass block. So, is there a sense of urgency for some of these teams? For Buffalo, there is, and that's to get their offensive line going. Because I don't care, that all three of these quarterbacks won't make it to week seven if the offensive line plays the way it's played the last 2 weeks.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm actually surprised we really haven't seen too much of a move in that Buffalo-Chicago game. I actually haven't read up yet to see what Matt Nagy plans to do with the Bears and all the players that they have. But you're right, Buffalo has a sense of urgency. And when you look around at some of these line moves here this week, the Jets from +1 to -3.5 or 4 against Philadelphia, that's game 105, 106 on the board. The Jets have three legitimate guys in that quarterback rotation that, you know, are probably going to play here this week. I mean, you know, Sam Darnold still needs to get the reps. Maybe he is your starter, maybe he is your guy, but he still needs to get the reps. You look at Cleveland, Baker Mayfield's going to play a lot. Browns from a plus 1.5 dog to a minus 2.5 point favorite. So, you know, these are some of the things that you can look for here in week four of the preseason. But once again, you've got to keep in mind that when we get to the second halves of these games, you're talking about fourth string quarterbacks where teams are deciding, do we want to keep this guy in the practice squad or do we want to just let him go? Those are the guys deciding your bets in a lot of these instances. So maybe playing first half derivatives here this week would be the way to go.
I just think there's so many gray areas. I think, to me, I would call the preseason, you know, that 3-week opportunity, and week four really becomes a circus act. I will say this, like, you know, again, trying to read between the lines, you know, Harbaugh's always been good at Baltimore. They run away. But like the Indianapolis game this past week, they were getting all the money, it seemed, San Fran's way. Oh, there's a love affair with Garoppolo, and Luck looked terrible in week two. But you're sitting there going, well, wait a minute. Here's a game that literally could have an impact on what the season's going to mean. There was legitimate, defined motivation for Indianapolis to get Andrew Luck going and say, hey, what are our fortunes here? The only confidence that Luck gained in week two was he took a hit from Suggs and got up. He said, well, I can take a hit. That's what he learned in week two. Now the team had to learn, can he throw the football anymore? Well, he looked good in week three, and that motivation was there, and they won the game. But in this week four thing, that we hear Indy's playing Cincinnati, Andy Dalton, their first team offense, they look great. They went up and down the field. He had some chemistry with A.J. Green, so some good things were done there. But now for Indy and Cincinnati, and I don't think Luck or Dalton or Green or players of that ilk, I wouldn't even put T.Y. Hilton out there. You don't know what you're going to see there.
No, I completely agree. And that was a game we talked about a lot last week, 49ers and Colts. Talked about how that line was going to move towards San Francisco. It did. But the Colts, even on that short week there, giving Andrew Luck a little bit more of a look, did come away with the win. So that was a pretty good handicap from you and I on last week's show. So, Brian, I guess I'll ask you this here. As we tie a bow on the preseason, what have we learned? Is there anything from the preseason that you're looking to possibly carry over to the regular season?
Well, I think the thing that's different, generally speaking, over the years, any adjustments that are made by the odds makers, it's week one to week two in NFL football, and you find you kind of figure it out, and you figure it out relatively quickly. I'm wondering if now this might be bled out into week three to a degree. The power ratings are still getting adjusted. Because you look at, you know, Dallas, and, okay, Ezekiel Elliott, he's not playing. How many of these teams are just not exposing, and I don't blame them one bit, exposing any of these guys to injury. So they're practicing, but in terms of getting up to game speed, week one is going to be such a weird learning curve where a lot of these guys are going to be shaking off the rust, and I think that's across the NFL. I think a lot of people have just flat-out rested everybody. So I think you're going to get a real feel for what a team is when they find some rhythm, but it may not be until week three.
No, that's an excellent point. I mean, you look at a team like the Los Angeles Rams as a prime example of this, where virtually nobody has played for that starting offense. And this isn't a situation like Green Bay where it's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers could roll out of bed on the first day of summer, probably throw a 60-yard dime to some random kid on a high school field, and we wouldn't worry anything about Aaron Rodgers. Jared Goff is very good, but for the Rams, I mean, this was still a young offense trying to come together, you know, a relatively young offensive line as well. You sort of wonder, like you said, how much of a carryover there is there for the regular season. And Brian, one last thing I'll ask you about here, and you know, we've kind of harped on this point quite a bit throughout the NFL preseason, this helmet rule. I mean, how much of an impact do you think that we see from a week one standpoint in terms of totals or maybe even side impact with this new rules package?
It's crazy. As nuts as it was, I think they bring it in, Adam. Now they're throwing intent in there. Inadvertent contact, it gives them some real serious wiggle room. So now it's going to be the really blatant ones. It's funny, it looked like anything that was going to be close was going to be called. I don't know that that's the case, and maybe this doesn't become that big a deal. It seems the numbers dropped dramatically from week one to week two to week three and plummeted. So and I think maybe part of that was a learning curve that these guys were out there getting accustomed to, not lowering their head. And I think that was part of the reason, the totals were a lot higher in preseason football. One, there were a lot of calls in the beginning that was keeping drives alive. I thought tackling was awful because some guys were, especially like safeties, corners, they were really tentative. They were taking bad angles, and the run after catch stuff in the preseason was through the roof.
Well, we'll see what happens here. Of course, we'll talk a lot about week one next week with Brian on the show. But, Brian, let's transition over to the golf side of things here. I know you're very interested in what's going on with the FedEx Cup playoffs. And, of course, we've got the Ryder Cup here coming up very soon as well over in France, which is a fantastic event. I mean, I know that there's going to be a time difference and some things like that. But if you get the opportunity to watch it, make sure that you do, because this is one of the few times in the golf world that these guys really show a lot of emotion. The one at Hazeltine was phenomenal. I imagine this year should be pretty good as well. But, Brian, Bryson DeChambeau last week, now your FedEx Cup points leader, 3,617. He's 648 ahead of Dustin Johnson because DeChambeau got 2,000 points for winning last week's Northern Trust. Did you have any piece to him? Were you surprised by that performance?
Was I surprised? No. Did I have a piece of it? No. Am I an idiot? Yes. The bottom line, I had Ian Poulter at 80-1 in Houston because he had to win that event to get into the Masters. Well, you talk about it. I looked at him and the price was no good. It's why I didn't do it. But the bottom line was for DeChambeau, he was highly motivated because he's in the discussion to get on the Ryder Cup team. Tiger's going to be an at-large pick. Phil Mickelson's going to be an at-large pick. And DeChambeau could be the odd man out. Well, he's going to do everything in his power to make it impossible for Jim Furyk to leave him off the tee. So he just picked up $1.6 million. Nice payday, but he ran away and hid from this thing because he was so motivated because he said, I'm a man on a mission, and it's all about making the Ryder Cup team.
And DeChambeau was a guy that was top 10 in FedEx Cup points going into last week. He was ninth. Now, of course, he's atop the mountain, but things change very, very quickly here with the amount of points that are given out for these FedEx Cup playoff events. And, Brian, last week it was a little bit different because we were at Ridgewood Country Club. The Northern Trust moves around. This week's Dell Technologies Championship does not. This has been at TPC Boston for as long as it's been around. So we've got more course form here this week. What type of course are we looking at here, and what style of player does it benefit?
Well, I would say you look for how about really good players? Last year, Justin Thomas was the winner. The year before that, Rory McIlroy was the winner. And McIlroy is making his first appearance in the FedEx playoffs. He had a cushion. He took last week off. So McIlroy comes in fresh. Good success on the course. Again, the price is not going to make anybody's day. Thomas at 10-1. McIlroy 6-1 is actually not a bad price. Dustin Johnson's the favorite at 8-1. If you're looking for a horse for the course, how about Paul Casey at 50-1? The last 2 years in Boston, he's finished fourth both times. You don't make the automatic leap. He's going to win this thing. But clearly it's a course he plays well on. So from an overlaid price perspective, in current form, I think you take a peek at Casey.
Let me interrupt you for just a second, Brian, because I want to ask you about that here. You've got a guy in Paul Casey that does have back-to-back top five finishes at TPC Boston, as you mentioned, but he's not in very good form lately. So you're getting this 50-1 price. You called it an overlay. That's the exact word that you just used. What do you look at more? Are you more prone to look at course form over recent form when it comes to, a spotlight event like this?
Current form trumps anything, Adam, and specifically in golf. We do this all year long. Golf is such a crazy, goofy sport where success can be so fleeting. The great players, they sustain it, and they're basically on the leaderboard all the time. The majority of guys on the PGA Tour, throughout the course of the season, maybe have a couple of 3 to 5 week windows where everything seems to be clicking. And the funny thing is, there are guys that are playing terrible, and all of a sudden they find something on the range, and they go nuts. So it's that fleeting a thing where, you know, when current form in a cycle, you want to pay attention to it. But knowing a course and having success, listen, you golf, when you're standing over a tee shot and you're sitting there, I've played this course 100 times, this doggone hole, it's a dog leg left, and the tree line is tight on the left, and I want to play a power fade, and, you know, now I get to either hit a draw that I'm not comfortable hitting, or you block it out and put it in the rough on the right. It's just that confidence level where so you're standing over a golf ball and you're going to hit it well, and there are courses that suit certain guys' eyes, and there's a comfort level there. So that's why you would consider a guy like Casey, is that for whatever reason, he's got positive vibes there. But you know me too. I mean, I'm also looking for price plays. Now we're to the point where they started with 125, down to 100, down to 70, down to 30 to go to East Lake in the Tour Championship. I've got a couple of long ones at the 80-1 price right now, and those are guys Xander Schauffele and Rafa Cabrera-Bella. I'll swing big out of the gate and then reload on Friday night, but I'll come in light on the way into this. But these are guys that are motivated to play very well because they're backed into a corner now. But they start to whittle this thing down and start to cut the field. So you look at the guys that have to make the move, and now's the time. Hey, listen, Billy Horschel got hot and won this thing a few years back. You know who's playing good right now? Billy Horschel.
Yeah, Billy Horschel is playing very well here. I see him at 50-1. He played well last week at Ridgewood too, which is a solid effort from him. Actually, he's down to 40-1. He was 50-1 yesterday at Five Dimes when I wrote up my preview, but he's down to 40-1 here. So somebody out there does like Billy Horschel.
He's normally 80.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And Brian, let me ask you about this here. You know, it does help that there's some familiarity with this course, but one thing that is unique about this event, with it being Labor Day weekend, the players play Friday to Monday instead of Thursday to Sunday. Does that have any impact for you from a betting standpoint this weekend?
It's mostly remembering it, that as a better that the thing goes into Monday. And it actually dawned on me. I actually this year said, oh, wait a minute, this is Labor Day. This thing doesn't start till Friday. So it means do a little more football work. You have a little extra day to gear up for this. But Monday's a holiday. So, yeah, we do get a little treat on Monday to watch the final round of this. And it's a dramatic course. A lot of cool things. It's a high-risk, high-reward course. I think these guys can go low there. I think it'll be a really good event. And I got to be honest with you, Adam. For many, many years, I just thought the FedEx in the beginning – it's another made-for-TV event, and it just didn't do a whole lot for me. But I will tell you, talk about being dead wrong, but the playoffs matter. These guys love it. The funny thing is, they say this stuff, and it sounds trite, but you were watching the round Sunday, and there were guys that literally had 8-foot putts to get into the top 100 in advance of play in the next tournament. So when they're saying all season long, well, every shot matters towards the Fed. You know what? It does. It really does, because now the next week, when you go from 100 down to 70, down to 30, and all you got to do is make the field at the Tour Championship to be in that top 30, just to play in that event. I mean, we talk about what you get when you win. If you've never won a tournament, you get to go to the Masters. Well, you get to go play in Hawaii. I mean, that's like it's an automatic check, right? No cut, and so there's a lot at stake, and these guys are motivated to do this.
Yeah, that Tournament of Champions that you're referencing is in January, and dudes put up huge numbers in that tournament. I think the winning score has been like 26, 27 under. I think Spieth won it at 30 under a couple of years ago. So not only is it a nice vacation, it's also a chance to go out there and play real well on a course that obviously sets up quite favorably for a lot of these different guys. I want to throw out a couple of different names at you here, Brian. I want to get your thoughts on them. One of the guys that a couple of guys I highlighted towards the bottom of my preview over at bangthebook.com, both 33-1 offshore right now. We'll start with Captain America, Patrick Reed. What do you think about him?
All right. I was going to guess. I was going to guess. One of them you're going to say is Fleetwood.
Fleetwood is not one of them. But I know you've been on Fleetwood a lot here lately.
I think Fleetwood's a guy to watch over the long haul here. Steady Eddie. Patrick, you know what? And I'll tell you what. Adam, you might be on to something. And mostly it would be for Reed to want to get his act together here for the Ryder Cup. And that's to get his game in good order, because he'll be this polarizing lightning bolt for the United States team over in France. We know what he's like. And actually, I like that thought process a lot. I think Reed makes complete sense.
Patrick Reed, over the last 3 years at TPC Boston, too, 6th, 5th, and 4th. So he's got 3 straight top 6 finishes here, going off at 33-1, because, again, he's not a guy that's in great form. Kind of that whole Paul Casey thing, a horse for course kind of play, but a guy that's not really playing particularly well here of late. So Fleetwood's not the other one at 33-1. Who do you think the other guy I might mention here is?
Was it 33-ish? Well, Chambeau's in that range again, but we've already talked about him. There could be a Stenson sighting, but how about Webb Simpson in current form?
Webb Simpson's a good one, but it is Henrik Stenson here, and I think that's one of those things, like you mentioned, in terms of DeChambeau and the emphasis that he's putting on the Ryder Cup here. I think Stenson is probably safe to be a captain's pick, but you would certainly like to see him come out and play well with the injury problems that he's been having.
No, and it's been kind of a weird year for Henrik Stenson. I mean, he's a stud. And the one thing about him, I'm surprised he didn't play better last week, because that course was all about hitting the fairway, and that's the strength of Stenson's game. He hits a 3-wood as far as most guys hit driver. But it's been kind of a rocky season for Stenson.
It has, and that's the tough thing, because, we just talked about it a little bit where, guys that maybe aren't in good recent form become horse for course plays because they have confidence at some of these courses, at some of these events. Stenson won this in 2013, was runner-up in 2015. If he's healthy, he's probably 20-1. So I think you're kind of gambling a little bit with an overlay on the health, and it is a big gamble because you don't necessarily know how healthy he actually is. And keep in mind, he is 42 years old now, so he's had a lot of golf, in his career. But, that's one of those ones where you think that he's probably a guy that's pretty motivated to make sure that he nails down one of those Ryder Cup spots. Like I said, he may already have one, whereas DeChambeau is a definite, on-the-fence kind of guy. But that's a very good betting angle here, because you've got a lot at stake for a lot of these guys, not just the FedEx Cup, but you've also got getting into the top 100, getting into the top 70, getting into the top 30, and then those guys on the Ryder Cup bubble. There's a lot of motivation here. And, by the way, these events pay out good money, too.
No doubt about it. And you know what? I'll throw one at you. He was a fashionable pick. I was on him in the PGA, and he was nowhere. But I would tell you, how about taking a look at the Wise kid, Aaron Wise? This is his first go-round at all these courses, and he showed up on the leaderboard again this past Sunday. So Wise all of a sudden starting to get his act together, and this is a young stud who's going to make a lot of noise for a lot of years. And in his first kick at the FedEx Cup here, I think Wise at 60-1. Actually, I might land on him. I'll add him to my list. I'm going to start off with DeChambeau, Shoffley and Carabao at 80-1. But I think I'd be nuts not to throw Wise in there at 60-1 to get off to a good start, because he finished strong this past weekend.
One last golf thing I want to ask you about here, Brian, and we'll obviously have plenty of time to talk about this with it being the Friday after Thanksgiving, but this Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson match at Shadow Creek, right now looking at 5 dimes, Tiger Woods -160, Phil +140 on the take back. Pay-per-view event here. I'm sure there will be tons of side action between these two guys on the course. Just give us a little bit of an introduction here. What's Shadow Creek like? Do you feel like, this is going to be it's going to go over real well in the sports books?
They made this, all the talk about this, it sounded like the coolest thing. And now I'm not so sure. The pay-per-view angle of this, I don't know. I don't, I don't, And I think the pay-per-view angle on it is going to dramatically impact the handle on the event. And the atmosphere is going to be bizarre out there. Word is they're not going to really let anybody out there. And the reason being, Shadow Creek, yeah, you can use the course, but they don't want the course destroyed. I mean, all the work that goes into putting on a tournament, and then the, you get the fans walking around wrecking the course. So there's going to be next to no one there. So there's going to be no real buzz or atmosphere for the players. And then you turn it into a pay-per-view event. And everybody I've talked to, I just played in the golf tournament Saturday, and we were, we're standing on the one tee waiting. And everybody's like, yeah, who cares? It was ridiculous. I mean, they made this thing a pay-per-view event, and I think, my God, don't turn this into boxing where you deny the best, people can't afford to watch this thing. The golf ratings aren't – I know ratings are great when Tiger's involved. That's their thought process. But I don't know about the pay-per-view aspect of it. And then what are they going to charge at?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And, of course, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the betting odds for this as we finish out the FedEx Cup playoffs and then also head on into the Ryder Cup where, both of these guys should probably end up on the team there. So, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Adam, they're available at sportsbookradio.com. They're always archived there. It's live on the app, KSHP Las Vegas or KSHP.com. And you gave me a good idea. We'll be doing videos, going to tape them tomorrow for Bang the Book. And obviously, we'll be looking at week one in college football. But the numbers came out. Odds have been posted, season point totals in the NHL. And very intriguing. And I think we'll get some good information on the video how these numbers are so correlated. It's almost like the Super Bowl props, where one prop has to connect and correlate to another prop. And then it's got to correlate to the side or the total for the game, pending what the prop is. That's the case here with the NHL season point totals, that some teams' numbers are down lower because their division or select foes have gotten better. And it's an interesting thought process what the odds makers are doing here.
Definitely looking forward to those. And you can find our YouTube page. Just go to youtube.com, search Bang the Book. You can find it there. Or, of course, if you follow us on Twitter at Bang the Book, you can find those videos once they get posted. So, Brian Blessing, Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Looking forward to those videos tomorrow there, Brian. Hope you're feeling better, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always a pleasure, pal. Have a great day.
Fun stuff there, as always, with Brian Blessing. Very informative there on the NFL preseason. And, then of course, taking a look at that golf betting market as well, which is something I do enjoy doing here on the show. I know it may not be for everybody, but, again, if there are betting opportunities out there and money to be made, you want to make sure that you're trying to do everything that you can to take advantage of those different markets that are out there. One more guest here for this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Adam, football has started. It's going wonderful.
Yes, sir. Yes, it has. And, we talked last week about that Wyoming-New Mexico State game, and we had power ratings numbers in that game ranging from 6.5 to 9.5. We did get a dissenting opinion on Friday's show, but nice to get off to a good start here this season with that winner on Wyoming.
It is. There's times that you question yourself, how could I be that far off? But, I've been in this business long enough that if you put in the work, you do solid research, you make sure that you're not missing any late-breaking injuries or suspensions, and you trust your numbers. It was a number that I had much higher than Vegas opened or that bettors bet it down to, and I was happy to capitalize.
All right, so let's talk about that whole thing from last week there. In week zero, we had six FBS teams in action, four of them playing each other, and then, of course, we had UMass and Rice. UMass blew out Duquesne. Rice had all kinds of problems with Prairie View, A&M. Had to come back in the fourth quarter, get that game-winning field goal right there at the horn. So in terms of power ratings adjustments from last week, Rolf, we talked about it. You had Wyoming 9.5. I had them 7.5. Number closed 5.5. But the game basically played out kind of as we expected, kind of as our numbers suggested. Did you make any adjustments for Wyoming or New Mexico State?
I don't make any adjustments until after week one. And basically for this reason, I mean, week zero could be an anomaly. You don't know. You know, you don't know if New Mexico State had the team flu and we didn't hear about it. If it was just, you know, I suspect Wyoming passed the eye test. New Mexico State didn't. And when it comes down to it, that's the test. But I don't make any adjustments till actually after week two. Now, in my mind, when I have my power rating numbers and I'm looking at them, I'm mentally changing them. But I don't want to change them on paper until I've seen a couple games. I've read a couple weeks of news. I know what the injuries are coming out of the game and what happened, and then I make my adjustments. I know some people do them every week. Some people do them after each game. I like to make sure it wasn't a one-week anomaly because, be honest with you, yes, we watched Colorado State and Hawaii, and yes, we watched Wyoming and New Mexico State, but I won't be able to watch every game this Saturday. So, therefore, I do wait till after week two to officially change my numbers and then move forward with them.
Well, and week zero and week one are so strange for a variety of different reasons. You've got kids that are suspended for a game or two based on something that they did over the summer. So, yeah, you've incorporated that into your power rating, but you also know that they've been practicing knowing that player isn't going to start with the first teamers or isn't going to play at all, you know, in these lead-ups to these games. So there's always that factor. And then Hawaii and Colorado State, a game like that was just so strange. I mean, you had 43 Hawaiian-born players on that Hawaii roster. Ironically or coincidentally, I guess if you want to say, they score 43 points while they're, you know, worried about everything happening back home. Colorado State without Mike Bobo for most of the lead-up to that game. So it was a very unique situation for them, too. You know, sometimes these games are just weird. You know, sometimes just these early games are a little bit strange. Maybe they don't go according to plan. And, of course, these are numbers that have also been sitting out there for, you know, what, 3-4 months now at this point. So I really like your approach. I did make some minor adjustments to the teams that we have seen play. And, of course, I made some injury adjustments here as well. But, you know, I like what you're saying here that, you know, if you're going to put in that preseason work, if you're going to do all that stuff over the summer, you kind of want to hold those positions a little bit more than, you know, just through one data point.
Yeah, and, you know, let's be honest, there's going to be 10 teams that completely overachieve what we thought they would because they have a new coordinator, because they have a new quarterback, because they have a new head coach, because they put in a new offense like Hawaii did the run and shoot. And, you know, not that I'm going to say teams, you know, the Vegas Knights are a story of a team around tragedy. And you know, I'm not comparing that to anything here, but hey, look, Hawaii had the hurricane, and what happens? They win the Little League World Series, and their players come out motivated to play for their people back home that are in a mini crisis. So there's times that, you know, we say, well, are kids distracted, or are these strong kids that are college students, young men that rally around situations?
Let me ask you about this real quickly here. We're not going to talk about this game in detail, but I do want to ask you about it here just to get your thoughts. Game 137-138, New Mexico State and Minnesota. We did talk about this one yesterday with Kyle Hunter. Is this line where it should be now, or have we seen a reaction to just how badly New Mexico State played in week zero?
Well, I think we've seen the reaction. And, you know, normally New Mexico State would be in a great situation. They're the team that had bowl practices. They had the 15 extra bowl practices with the same head coach. That's a positive moving forward. Normally a game under the belt is a positive moving forward, but this is such a unique situation. They're the first team ever to play two college football games in the month of August because of their independent schedule. That's what they had to come up with because they couldn't find people to schedule them during the rest of the year. Playing back-to-back games in 4 days after getting beat up against a physical Wyoming team. Now, Minnesota is not Wisconsin or you know, another huge physical team, but they are certainly a bigger team than New Mexico State. I did play Minnesota when it came out. I have 18 on that line on Sunday when they reposted that number. But at 21, it's where it should be. I'm not gonna be on either side in that one now. But I do think with the 18, I like where I am. Playing back-to-back games early in the year when you don't have an offense or a defense situated yet against a team that's very hungry and a, a PJ Fleck guy that can get his guys motivated. If I had to pick a side at the side, it would still be the Gophers.
So what was your personal number on this game? I know you said you got
18.
I got 18.
Okay, my power rating number.
Go ahead.
My power rating number was actually only 18.5.
Okay.
But
so, see, this is a good example here of what I wanted to talk about with this and why I was kind of hoping that we were going in this direction, because the power ratings are a guide. They're a good starting point. They're a way to possibly see where these lines are going to be moving. But then here you are, Rolf, applying these situational elements and some of these other concepts. And also, you know, look, you said you don't make an adjustment. Well, for New Mexico State last week, not only did they play poorly, but they were on the field defensively for about 42 minutes of that game. You're not going to adjust your power rating number based on that. That's a situational element and a good example of why power ratings are useful and they're helpful, but they're not the be-all, end-all.
Again, you know, we said this. My number is 33% of basically what I go through. My situational, my technical, my matchup handicapping, all of that has to go into it. But yes, you know, if I have a power rating, I would say I rarely go against a power rating that is more than 3 off. I think I have maybe once or twice if a team is facing the option on a short week on the road, that type of situation. But really, if it's within 3, and even if I'm the wrong side of 3, there's times I've used that game because of the other things being so strong, the other handicapping techniques being so strong and overrode the power rating number.
All right, let's look at some of these games here, and I want to try and crowdsource a lot of different opinions on a lot of different games as we go throughout the week here. And I had a listener reach out to me with some games that he was interested in here for this week, and we're going to talk about some of those here on today's show. And, of course, again, for any listeners that are out there, if there are games you want us to dive into with our guests, our professional handicappers here, hit me up on Twitter at SkatingTripods, or you can email me, adam@bangthebook.com. So, Rolf, let's start here on Friday, game 143-144, Syracuse versus Western Michigan. And this is one I'm interested in as well, because my number is quite a bit off from the market here with Syracuse favored by 6.
Well, my power rating is quite a bit off as well. I was much closer to the South Point opening number. South Point opened up the game Syracuse won. My power rating is actually 1.5. And you look at Syracuse, and they're a team that hasn't won games. They're a team that's 2-8 straight up on the road the last 2 years. They're a team that hasn't been an away favorite under Babers in his 2 years. And again, you've heard me talk numerous times. You first have to learn to win on the road in college football, and then you have to learn how to cover on the road. It's a much different attitude going to a hostile environment, having that lead, keeping that lead, and extending that lead to cover what is now a 6-point spread. You know, and in fact, Syracuse over the last 8 years, I'm not one to normally look back into last 8 years as far as history goes, but in their last 8 years, they've only covered 2 games as an away favorite. There's a mentality there. Now on the Western Michigan State side, you know, you have a team that has historically played well against the Big Ten. Oh, yeah, and by the way, you have a head coach, you have an OC, and you have a DC that all coached at Syracuse up to 3 years ago. These are people that went to this school, are now coaching in a lower echelon school, who now get to host this program. I think this will be a lower scoring game that's expected. Syracuse offense did play, is an experienced offense with a quarterback, but I just think that it's a game where the offense takes a little bit slower to adjust, and I'm happy to grab the points in this one.
It's interesting to hear you say you've got this number 1.5. I've got this one listed as a pick 'em, and maybe I'm just a little bit higher on Western Michigan, or maybe I'm lower on Syracuse in the market. I guess we'll, you know, maybe find that out here over the next couple of weeks. But Western Michigan last year looked so much different with John Wessink at quarterback than they did with Reese Goddard. They were basically a completely one-dimensional offense in the second half of last year. They could not throw the football. Goddard, 45.8% completion percentage. Wessink, before he got hurt, 64.2%, 14-4 touchdown interception ratio. And Tim Lester was a quarterback who played in college, in the XFL, and in the Arena League. So if you want a guy to develop a quarterback for you, he's a pretty good guy to do it, I would say. Having the summer with Wasink, having these fall practices and all that, knowing what he's got in this team finally, I like Western Michigan here for this season. I think I'm probably a little bit higher on them than the rest of the market. That's probably where my number difference comes in for this one. Syracuse is tough to play. I mean, they play that tempo. Western Michigan's going to have to be ready to go right from the jump. You've got Michigan on deck for the Broncos, which in-state rival against, you know, big brother. But still, I think Western Michigan's the side here. I'm actually surprised that, you know, we haven't seen this number move too much. But I do think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I think Brad has Syracuse from from over the summer at 2 or something like that. So, you know, differences of opinion out here in the market again.
Well, again, I, like I said, I was with Brad when we made those plays, and, you know, I knew it opened up single digits, a couple points, and it was one of the bigger movers. I don't know if he played that game. He very well may have, because his numbers were a little different than mine when it came to that. But, you know, it's a game where it's a tough place to go play. It's, you know, you're used to, if you're Syracuse, ACC stadiums, and, you know, you have to feel, I have to feel the players are going to say all the right things. Yes, it's the college opener, but this is a team, Syracuse, that last year they played the toughest road schedule in all of college football. They played 5 road games last year at LSU, at NC State, at Miami of Florida, at Florida State, and at Louisville. Well, no wonder they got crushed on the road. You play those 5 teams, you're going to have that scenario. But now you have these 14 starters back after facing those 5 road scenarios, and you walk into Western Michigan on a Friday night into Kalamazoo that you bust in from who knows where. I have to think that those players think, wow, this isn't ACC football. But then they're going to line up against a team that's pretty good. And, you know, we saw Western Michigan last year hang toe-to-toe against USC in the first half. And then they go into Michigan State, and they played well against Michigan State Week 2, losing by 14. So, you know, you have an experienced team that I think has a chip on their shoulder against a team that is going to have to be motivated 100% to come out of here with a win.
Well, of course, Western Michigan, you talk about a chip on its shoulder. They won 6 games last year, didn't get picked to go to a bowl game. So while they missed out on those bowl practices, and that's a bummer with a first-year head coach like Lester, you know, they certainly have every motivating factor in the world here to get off to a good start in 2018. Let's slide down to game 149-150 on the board here. This one's San Diego State and Stanford, big-time rivalry or revenge game, excuse me, for the Cardinal.
Yeah, you know, I look at this game and everyone says rivalry and everyone says revenge. But I just look at what Stanford does and what Stanford is. And really, regardless of the situation, I have trouble backing them as a 2-touchdown favorite. This is another game that my power ratings actually has Stanford at 16 with a line at 14.5. But this is clearly a game that I'm going to be on San Diego State or pass. And the reason is when you look at San Diego State going to Stanford this year, Stanford's 2-6 is a double-digit favorite the last 2 years. They're going to have an offense that runs the ball. You're going to have a 3-3-5 Rocky Long defense that knows how to at least slow down the run. Yes, Bryce Love is as good as it gets, but they do know how to slow down the run. And you have, most importantly, a Stanford team that has USC on deck. You have one of your biggest games of the year, your conference opener on deck, and that's huge when it comes to week one. It makes all the difference in the world to me what you're going to show week one at home with what you have on deck. And you look at Stanford, and we think of Stanford as a running team with a great defense. Well, I'll tell you what, that defense last year allowed 405 yards per carry. You look at Stanford as a 9-5 team. Can you believe Stanford was outgained last year? Stanford was outgained on the year by 17 yards per game. And now you only have six back on defense. Yes, the offense will be better in Costello's second year. Yes, Costello will pass for better than 58.8%. Yes, Bryce Love, again, is as good as it gets with 2,000 yards and 8 yards per carry. But it's the defense that concerns me, and I think that it's going to be tough to get margin to cover two touchdowns.
I think what's really interesting about this game to me is that San Diego State loses Rashad Penny, and you thought, okay, it's going to be real hard to replace Denell Pumphrey. They wound up doing it, but we knew that Rashad Penny was a pretty good back. We don't know a whole lot about Juwan Washington, although he did run for 6 yards per carry last year, but this line is exactly where it was last year with home field advantage flip. Last year, San Diego State plus 8.5 at home. Now they go out on the road just for home field advantage. They're 14.5 on the road. So the fact that these two teams are rated equal to where they were last year in week three, when the Aztecs don't have Penny, is pretty interesting to me.
Well, yes and no. In that same respect, Stanford last year was a team that came in ranked number 14 and had 16 returning starters. This year they have three less. They only have 15 returning starters. San Diego State last year was a team coming off a very good 11-3 season, but they only had 11 starters back last year. And so give Rocky Long credit to get them to 10-3 with only 11 starters back. This year they returned 14, 7 on each side of the ball.
All right, so let's go over to Saturday here, and this is a pretty interesting game. Florida Atlantic and Oklahoma, this one in Norman, the Lane train heading out on the road, game 151-152, first game on the board, actually, for Saturday. Oklahoma favored by 21. No Baker Mayfield, but Lincoln Riley, probably the best offensive mind in the country at this point. You assume that offense is going to be pretty good. Of course, you would think Florida Atlantic's offense would be pretty good as well. What are you seeing from this game, Rolf?
You know, I know there's a lot of people that are in love with Florida Atlantic. I am clearly not one of them. You know, I look at what Florida Atlantic did, and yes, they ran through their schedule. They played one of the weakest schedules there are. But if you go one step further and look past the scores and look to the yardage that Florida Atlantic had, Florida Atlantic finished a plus 109 yards per game. Well, they finished that because they had a 500-yard edge on Bethune-Cookman. They had a 384-yard edge on North Texas. They had a 300-yard edge on Charlotte and a 400-yard edge on North Texas. Listen to what they did against teams that were good last year. They got outgained by 200 yards against Navy. They got outgained by 316 yards at Wisconsin. They got outgained by 97 yards at Louisiana Tech. They got outgained by 28 yards home against Marshall. They got outgained by 15 yards home against Middle Tennessee. They got outgained at Western Kentucky. And they got outgained by 46 yards at Buffalo. They were a very fortunate team, being plus 13 in turnovers. I don't think that's going to happen this year. They don't know who's going to play quarterback. They had Driscoll last year, who had an excellent 15-4 ratio, 66.5%. Lane Kiffin said before he gets on the plane on Thursday, he's going to name his starter. And there's three people. It's DeAndre Johnson, who threw three passes last year. It's Chris Robinson, who, by the way, got kicked out of Oklahoma a couple years ago. He redshirted here. And Lane Kiffin did say Chris Robinson runs like Johnny Manziel. And it was supposed to be Chris Robinson's job all spring. But what happened is Rafay Peavy just transferred in 3 weeks ago. Rafay Peavy is a kid who was a top 15 quarterback who signed with Arkansas back in 2014, redshirted there, was with SMU last year, and now is a graduate transfer. And he's a guy that, with all that experience he has sitting on teams that can win with Arkansas, that pass with SMU, he's taken over the command in August, so he very well can win this job. So you may have a brand-new quarterback who's only been there 3 weeks. But it's a situation that, yes, Oklahoma has UCLA on deck, but I still think that Oklahoma's been sitting here And they've got to feel that the whole world's talking about FAU. FAU can knock off Oklahoma. They can beat them. FAU's offense. Lane Kiffin's going to get this FBS job. I just think you're tired of hearing it. And while Lane Kiffin wants to win, I'll tell you what, I think next week's game for FAU is more important. You don't normally think about an FAU team looking ahead to a team, but they've got Air Force at home. That's a home game they have to win if they're going to want to go to a bowl. They can't let this one loss turn into two losses by getting beat against Air Force at home next week.
I've got this one right on the number at 21, but you made a compelling argument here for Florida Atlantic being a team that's certainly in line for some regression. And one other thing that I was thinking about here is that, you know, if Oklahoma still had Baker Mayfield and it was still status quo and it was just a carryover of last season, there's probably less of a sense of urgency for this team to come out here and look really, really good. But now that you're putting Kyler Murray in there, you'd like to get some confidence going. You'd like to get this kid out there chucking the football around, making plays with his legs, lots of RPOs. Florida Atlantic probably doesn't have the speed defensively to keep up with Oklahoma. And for Lincoln Riley here, I mean, first of all, there aren't a lot of people that like Lane Kiffin, so he's going to have no qualms whatsoever about running it up if he can. And also, you want Kyler Murray to get a feel for this offense. Kyler Murray is getting the keys to the Ferrari here for the Oklahoma Sooners. They will have no problem hanging 70 if they can. Last year with Baker Mayfield, if it's business as usual, he knows the offense, already knows what's going on, maybe they work on some things. Maybe they work on some areas of weakness. But here, I think they're fully focused on getting this kid ready for the grind of the regular season. Yeah, we'll probably see Austin Kendall, but Austin Kendall's a kid who's pissed off that he didn't win this quarterback competition here at Oklahoma. So when he comes in the game, he's highly motivated. The more I think about this game, the more I process it. And again, my power rating number right there on 21 feels like Oklahoma boat races FAU in this game. I don't know if that happens, but that's kind of the feeling I'm starting to get.
Yeah, and you look at him, and I, on another radio show, someone said, well, Oklahoma has UCLA on deck. Are they going to be looking ahead? And I said just the opposite. I think, number one, I agree with you. You've coached 1 year in college football, Mr. Lincoln Riley. You have one Heisman winner. Imagine if you get another guy close this year to be in the Heisman contention. You are set recruiting any quarterback you want the rest of the time you're at Oklahoma. It's just going to happen. You know, back-to-back Heismans or back-to-back close Heismans, you know, it's like being a running back and going to Stanford. Okay, that's where we're going to go. It's no question. And while they have UCLA on deck, I'm sure we may be talking about this or you may, next week they have UCLA on deck, but the following week they have their conference opener against Iowa State. Oh, yeah. That's that Iowa State team that Oklahoma lost to last year as a 31-point favorite. So if anything, I think UCLA is in the preferred spot last week with Oklahoma between the season opener having to look good and the conference opener with 31-point home loss revenge against Iowa State.
And the last thing I'll say about Oklahoma, I think it's a great point about the UCLA game next week. And the Bruins are going to be very interesting for a variety of different reasons. We've talked about them on our Pac-12 preview shows. Wouldn't shock me if UCLA looks competent next week. On the other hand, it wouldn't shock me if they got blown out either. But you know, for Oklahoma here, I think that there's going to be a lot of questions throughout the year about Kyler Murray. How invested is this kid? Because he's got a baseball job waiting for him. He's got his signing bonus. He'll be in the minor leagues next year. How invested is he in playing college football for this year? Well, the kid wanted to play. He asked the team that drafted him. I can't remember now. I think it might have been Oakland. He asked the team that drafted him, you know, hey, I want to play college football this year. Can I do it? And they let him do it. So if he wants to play that badly to where he's willing to put, you know, his possible baseball career at risk, I don't know if you can really question the motivation of this kid. Will he make a business decision here or there over the course of the season? Yeah, probably. And I won't fault him for that. But this is a kid that wants to go out there and play. So I think certainly at the very least in week one, he's going to want to go out there and give max effort. Oklahoma, I mean, there's so many things that this Oklahoma team can do, so many offensive wrinkles. And by the way, Florida Atlantic, a 25-year-old offensive coordinator in Charlie Weiss Jr., making his debut as an OC here in this game. A lot of things stacking up against Florida Atlantic, it feels like.
Well, you know, in Florida Atlantic last year, You know, while they only allowed 4.0 yards per carry, you know, you look at the competition they played. Well, their top three teams they faced, they allowed 6.6 to Wisconsin. They allowed 6.1 to Navy. And they even allowed 6.9 yards and 248 yards to Old Dominion. So when you have a team like that that can be run on, and then you add Kyler Murray and you add a 1,000-yard receiver in Marquise Brown and an 800-yard receiver in CeeDee Lamb and, you know, a 1,000-yard rusher who averages 6.1 yards per carry in Rodney Anderson, I just think, again, it's a game that I'm looking at the over. It's one of those 69 numbers, but I'm on the Oklahoma side or pass on this.
All right, let's slide down to game 171, 172 on the board. And again, to our listeners, I think I mentioned this at the top of the segment, but as you're listening to the show here, if you're following along on your odd screen to see what the updated numbers are when you get a chance to listen, make sure that you sort that odd screen by rotation number, because that's how we're going to do it here on the shows. This has been a pretty big mover over the summer here. This one was actually down to 9, 9.5 yesterday, I believe. It's back up to 10, 10.5 now. Northern Illinois taking on Iowa. Iowa 10, 10.5 point favorite, as I just mentioned. But this one was 14.5 offshore over the summer when it opened at Bookmaker. Kind of come down from that point. Iowa's got some suspension issues here, Rolf.
Yeah, they're suspending two starters, one on the O-line, one on the D-line. And on the O-line, that's going to give them three first-time starters. Now, two of those new starters are fifth-year seniors. But the starter on the defensive side of the ball is going to be a walk-on who they love. It's a fifth-year walk-on from a little local city right next to Iowa City. But it does hurt being down two starters on the O-line. And, you know, you look at Northern Illinois, well, they're a team that got after the ball. They had 43 sacks last year. They were 13.0 sack percentage, which is decent. And, you know, when you're putting up guys – that their D-line is not big. It's 255 and 230 for the ends. It's a smallish D-line. But there's times where I've learned that when you're Iowa and you have big guys that want to run the ball like Iowa does and you're having to get ready for big defensive linemen like the Big Ten has, there's times those smaller DEs really cause those tackles problems. And again, one of these new starters is their left tackle. So, you know, that's the concern from that side. This clearly is, I mean, if you're going to pick out one game that is the technical game of the week, this is clearly it. You have a Northern Illinois team that is 10-1 ATS against the Big Ten. You have a Northern Illinois team that went to Nebraska last year and won. You have a Northern Illinois team that went to Northwestern in 2014, pulled the upset. They came here to Iowa 2013, pulled the upset. You have a Huskies team that is 9-3 as an away dog the last 4 years. And you have an Iowa team that we know is like Stanford. They run the ball. They're very conservative. They don't get margin. Therefore, they're 12-22-1 ATS as a home favorite the last 6 years. So all those things point towards Northern Illinois in this game. One concern I do have is if you look at the way Northern Illinois finished the year last year, yes, they went 8-5. But I'll tell you what, the defense allowed 31 points against Western, 31 points against Central, and then allowed 36 points against Duke in the bowl. They had problems when they played the best teams or the better teams in the MAC, and then Duke at the end of the year. So, you know, it's a situation where I cannot back Iowa in any role as a 10.5 point favorite, especially because they have Iowa State on deck next week. We know that game means everything to them. So getting a win, yes. As far as covering goes, this is one where I clearly lean with the Huskies.
Well, and this is one of those games, too, where we've got a total moving down. Total open 51, it's down to 48.5. And anytime you've got a total moving down, there's certainly a natural inclination to look to take the points because, obviously, lower scoring game, you'd like to start with that cushion of points. You know, and for Northern Illinois, too, I mean, this was a problem for me, I think, in terms of power rating this team. You know, Rod Carey's been solid. He obviously hasn't done what Dave Doran has done or what Jerry Kill did there in his last year. But, you know, this is a team that's had so many injuries over the last 4 or 5 years. They've been playing multiple quarterbacks because guys just can't stay healthy. It kind of skews, you know, their results and their outcomes over the last few seasons. So you would think at this point in time, Northern Illinois is the healthiest that they are going to be. So we should see the closest thing to what this, the Huskies have as a ceiling.
And I'll tell you what, you know, sometimes injuries become a positive for the following year. And I clearly think this is a situation for Northern Iowa, because what happened? Well, they had to play Marcus Childress as a redshirt freshman. They weren't planning on playing him last year. He ended up winning MAC Freshman of the Year, had a 16-5 TD to interception ratio, ran for 473 yards and five more TDs. And it's a kid as a redshirt freshman that only completed 57.4% of his passes. So this is someone who's going to have just matured. You go from your freshman year that you weren't expecting to play to making seven starts, and then you now are the leader coming in the next year. You had the bowl practices, you have the spring practices, and you have the fall practices. So, you know, this is a quarterback that I think will make that progression. My problem with the concern is in his seven starts, he lost at Toledo, he lost at Western Michigan, he lost against Duke. Yes, he did have a win against Bowling Green, but who didn't? So he has to be composed enough to handle the stage and not fumble the ball on a run or force a couple passes to make the turnovers. If Northern Illinois is within one turnover, you know, as long as they're not minus two, three, or four turnovers in the turnover margin, I think they cover this game.
Yeah, my number on this game is 9, but doing so much with baseball over the summer, it was hard for me to get all of my stuff in order here to put together numbers and power ratings and all that. So didn't get involved with this one over the summer at the better number, but you know, we'll see what happens with the betting market as we get closer to kickoff here. One more game I want to touch on specifically, and then we'll run through the pick six segment for the first time here with Rolf. Washington and Auburn, game 193-194, premier big-time non-conference game. This one has significant college football playoff implications right out of the chute. Obviously, a neutral site game here for this one. But that being said, while it's a quote-unquote neutral site, certainly much short travel here for Auburn as they just go out to Atlanta. Washington, of course, with that long trip from Seattle down to Atlanta. So this one right now, Auburn, 1.5-point favorite. Couple of twos out there as well. A big, big, big-time game here, Rolf.
Well, I give Auburn a 4-point home edge for their normal games in Jordan-Hare Stadium. I actually gave Auburn 2.5 points in this game. You know, number one, you have the fan base. You're in the middle of SEC country. But when in the world do you ever play three straight games in the same stadium unless you're at home? And what do they remember? Well, let's see. They faced Georgia in the SEC championship. They lost 28-7. They were completely unmotivated against UCF in the Peach Bowl. They lost 34-27. You want to talk some fired up young kids walking into the Georgia Dome this year. I think that's going to happen. You know, to me, it's clearly competition and who they've played. Washington last year played two ranked foes from the year. That was it. They lost to Stanford and Penn State, went 0-2 straight up in ATS. They were outgained by 150 yards per game. Auburn played seven ranked foes. They were plus 30 yards per game. Biggest mismatch on the board actually favors Washington. Washington's defense against an Auburn O-line that only returns one starter. But Auburn's O-line isn't that bad. They returned four other guys that made at least five starts. So you have a semi-experienced O-line, but not quite the O-line you want to play this opponent week one. But to me, it's the Auburn D-line. I think they're the second-best D-line behind Clemson. When you force Washington quarterback to throw into man-to-man, he's a completely different quarterback. I've watched some film on Browning, and someone made a great point on an article that when Browning has man-to-man offense, Him and his receivers just do not click. The timing is off. It's not the same. All Browning's success is in the zone. Auburn's D-line won't allow him to go – won't allow Auburn's defense is going to play man-to-man, and they got the D-line to do that. So I think that's a big edge to Auburn as well. This is a game that could actually make one of my plays. It's in the top seven. It's in the mix right now. I don't know if it'll get there or not, but it's pretty darn close on Auburn.
Yeah, I'm checking here. I think I gave Auburn about a point to a point and a half of home field advantage here for this one. I've got Washington minus one, but I have no interest in playing Washington in this spot. I mean, not only are we not really crossing any key numbers or anything like that, but a couple of different angles here. And you mentioned, I love the point you made about Jake Browning and the problems that he could face here with that Auburn pass rush, with Auburn's ability to play single coverage on the outside and match up that way. It's just a speed thing for me. I mean, the Pac-12 North is, you know, Oregon's a quick team, but Stanford's really not. Washington doesn't really live on speed. They just live on not making mistakes. They play a lot of mistake-free football. Chris Peterson recruits very, very well. You know, they don't have to have SEC speed in the Pac-12. And I know that's kind of a buzzword and people kind of turn their noses up at that now that, you know, other conferences seem to be catching up to the SEC. But that's the biggest concern for me in this game for Washington is they can't match Auburn's speed. And you cannot replicate speed in practice. There are a lot of things you could replicate. There are a lot of things you can ask your scout team quarterback to do. There are a lot of things you can do with studying the option or something like that. You cannot replicate speed. And that's what really worries me in this game for Washington. So while my numbers from a pure power rating standpoint do have Washington favored by a point or two, you know, of course, with home field adjustments in there for Atlanta, I can't take Washington. It would be Auburn or nothing for me. And I may end up on the Auburn side as I take a deeper look into this game.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned you can't replicate speed, and I love that thought. And, you know, I think it's very fair to say SEC speed because, you know, obviously I grew up in Cleveland. You're still in that area, and we hear Ohio State. Well, you know, how did Ohio State get good? Well, they finally got SEC speed. Meyer went to Florida, recruited some wide receivers. He went to Texas, recruited some DBs, you know, and he finally got that speed. So SEC speed is unique. I mean, Clemson has it. Ohio State has it. You know, there's only a handful of teams that do have it. And I agree with you. The only other thing that I think is you can't replicate in practice is the chop blocking of the offense. This is getting off subject, but you know, for our listeners, throw that in your mind because you can't practice and replicate speed and you can't practice and replicate chop blocks because there's no coach in America that's going to let your O-line get chop blocked in practice when you're preparing for an option.
All right, let's go through the pick six segment here. And again, we're doing this for the first time with Rolf, so we'll see how this goes. Six games, rapid fire fashion. Quick bullet point thoughts, a pick or a lean if you've got one, whether it's the side or the total. And, of course, we do have totals for all these games. When we do this on Mondays with Kyle Hunter, we usually don't have totals because they're not out yet. But we've got the full smorgasbord here for this week. So, Rolf, let's start with a Thursday game that we didn't touch on. We saw a line move on this one overnight, which leads me to believe that Clayton Thorson is going to play for Northwestern. Game 135-136, Purdue minus 1.5 against Northwestern.
You know, this game actually opened up Northwestern, a 2-point favorite at the South Point back when Brad and I were there the opening day. And then it moved because Thorson, you know, tore his ACL in the bowl game. Thorson's ready. I've read a lot of reports out of Chicago. He is ready to go. This is a team where I clearly like Northwestern. I think they have the coaching edge. I think they have the mentality that this is their year. And, it'll be a solid opinion, one of what I call a TV play, which means it won't be one of my top 5 to 7 plays that I give out to my customers. But for those people that are with me, I give TV opinions out or which are strong or close to being a play. It'll be a TV play on Northwestern.
All right, let's go to Friday, August 31st here. We'll go game 159-160, Army and Duke. Duke is a 13.5-point favorite. This one up from 11 where it opened offshore.
I like Duke. I like Duke's defense. Army's having some issues with their new quarterback, their new centers. And, you know, they now that they've played, Duke has prepared for Army, and it's a big advantage playing that option week one when in the summer practices they're your next opponent. Big edge scheduling-wise for Duke.
Do you think that number gets over 14? Think it just keeps going?
You know, I don't, the reports I've read out of Army is that, you know, while they know who the quarterback's going to be and while they're playing, the offense just isn't clicking yet. So, you know, Duke is a team that historically I was afraid to back. But you look at them the last few years, they've been very good at home now. And, you know, you have 8 starters back from that defense. So will it go over 14? I think it very well may. I don't think Army scores more than 13 points this game.
All right, how about this game? This will be a real interesting one. Game 175-176, 6 o'clock Eastern time kickoff. Boise State heads down to Alabama to take on Troy. These two teams played on the Smurf turf last year. Boise State laying 10.5 as they go play in the hot and humid Southeast.
You know, Neil Brown has done the right thing. You have a team that's won 21 games the last 2 years. I am backing Troy. You know, I think they're a team that was plus 82 yards per game last year. They have 12 starters back. You have you do have to replace Brandon Silvers at quarterback, and you know they found that guy in Sawyer Smith. Boise making the tough road trip, and I like Troy. I just think you're giving a quality team that's won 21 games that much at home. I'm going to take them.
Another thing you can't replicate: heat and humidity. I mean, the kids from Boise do not play in this. Obviously, much much closer to sea level. Heat index of 90, 95 or so at kickoff for this game, 70% humidity and going up throughout the game. So for Boise State here, you know, obviously going to be a tough game on their boys, especially the guys there in the trenches. All right, let's talk about
probably worse than altitude. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. Especially here this early in the season, trying to get into game shape and having to deal with those, I'll call them unseasonably warm conditions. For the Boise State kids. All right, how about this game here? I think we have these are a couple of teams that have been very difficult to rate here over the summer. Game 195-196, not a sexy game by any means. Central Michigan takes on Kentucky, the Wildcats laying 17 at home.
Yeah, you know, I've gone back and forth on this game. So this is one where I am going to just sort of bail on and say that you know, I think when I made out my score projections, I figured to Kentucky to score 28 to 30 points, and I have Central Michigan scoring 14 to 17 points. You know, the Chips have played some big guys, but you've got a situation with Kentucky again. You're 0-5 as a favorite last year. You're 2-9 ATS against non-SEC foes. I can't back Kentucky, but I don't have enough to jump on Central Michigan.
Yeah, this is a weird game. I mean, Kentucky just lost another offensive lineman for the season, their left tackle. So I made a half-point adjustment to Kentucky because their offensive line wasn't all that great to begin with. But that looks like a very, very challenging game there in Lexington. All right, let's go to a real dog of a game here. Game 209-210, Old Dominion takes on Liberty. First game in FBS for the Flames. But Old Dominion, a growing favorite in this game, up to 6.5.
Yeah, I will tell you this, that I make this total. There's no total out on this game yet because Liberty's new and people are afraid to put it out there. I make the total 54.5. So when I go through, I make a line and I make a total. So we'll see what happens with that. Right now, you know, everyone remembers Liberty beat Baylor, and I think that's why there was so much excitement early this year. But you know, when you make that jump and you have the transition from your scholarships of having 55 to 65 to 75 as you make this transition up, it's tough to get that many new people in and be ready. You know, yes, App State did it, and yes, Georgia Southern did it incredibly. I think those two teams won the Sun Belt the first 3 years they were in it, but I don't see Liberty having that same type of success. I like Old Dominion. I'm not afraid to lay it with them. Not going to be one of my stronger plays, but if I had to make a lean, it would certainly be on ODU.
I think that's five. If it's not, what the hell? We're just going to go ahead and do seven here. One more game to look at in this pick six segment. We'll go to Sunday. We'll go to the neutral site game between Miami and LSU, game 217, 218 on the board. Standalone Sunday game. This one, two premier name brand programs. Going to be a ton of betting handle for this one. Right now, Miami, 3.5-point favorite offshore.
Yeah, you know, I was on a LSU radio station, a New Orleans radio station, like during the summer, and they said we got Joey Burrow, and I said, so what? The guy couldn't do anything at Ohio State. Don't worry about it. He's not even going to challenge. So here I go. I was completely wrong. Now we're going to have Ohio State transfer Joey Burrow making the start for LSU, and, you know, it's one of those things that, like Hawaii, we don't know what to expect. LSU's new OC is trying to put in the no huddle and go up pace with them. I don't think that's going to work against some SEC defenses. And while Miami of Florida is greatly improved, you know, people made a lot of their turnover chain. And yes, it was exciting. And yes, it helped them and it benefited their players going into plus 13 turnovers. But this is a situation where I lean with Miami. And I think I'm going to lean with the over just because it's one of those games. Well, yes, Miami put up 29 yards per game, but the offense, those numbers are really slanted when late in the year when they struggled at Pittsburgh and only put up 14. And then in the ACC title game, they only had three against Clemson. You know, it was, I think the situation happened well. That Pittsburgh defeat ended up costing them the Clemson game, and the Clemson game they just got beat against Wisconsin. So in this situation, I lean Miami, and I'm going to have a slight lean with the over. But, you know, credit to Mark Richt. He's got that team turned around, having 19 wins in 2 years, and they're clearly the class in the ACC Coastal, and they're going to win it, and they're going to face Clemson in the ACC title game.
Last thing I'll ask about with this game here, and this is how we'll finish up the segment, Rolf. Miami doesn't travel well. I mean, there's no secret about that. It's a program that's had a very hard time here over the last few years, you know, getting a lot of support for this program. So did you give LSU any home field advantage despite this game being in Arlington, Texas?
I gave them one because the LSU fans will travel. And, you know, at least let's say this, you know, at least last year, Miami got up to 50,000 per game. You know, and it's a small private school. You know, they're one of the smallest. They only have 16,000 enrollments. So, you know, and when you go to Coral Gables and you realize how far they got to go to the games, you understand a lot of that. But again, it's still a major program. And, you know, you think about the heyday of Miami, you couldn't get a ticket to the old Orange Bowl. But yeah, I mean, the crowd clearly is going to be 3-1. But for me, you know, having a 3-1 with some neutrals doesn't dictate giving more than 1 point. If there's some familiarity with the stadium, you know, Ohio State at Arlington, you know, when they play TCU, yes, they won the national championship there. Yes, they're staying at the same hotel. Yes, there's some familiarity with the coaching staff and things. You know, that's a little bit more for me where I give some. But if it's just a crowd edge and it's in a neutral setting where there's still going to be a bunch of neutral fans, if it's 3-1 only LSU, I might give a point and a half or two. But if it's 3-1 with 30,000 neutral fans, it's not the same type of edge for me.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What do you got going on over at the website right now, Rolf?
You know what? First Pitch Daily, there's a game of the year guide. If you want to look what the opening lines were for every game of the year from the Las Vegas Superbook, I have a trend and angle on each of those. The First Pitch newsletter, again, that goes out daily for baseball. And starting next week will be the Gridiron Guide. It's my daily log sheet for college football. Each game is on one page. You're going to have the quarter scoring, the yards, the turnovers. You're going to have about 15 ATS and over-under categories. That'll be up starting next Monday.
And, of course, you can follow Rolf on Twitter, at CalSportsLV, and he's over at wagertalk.com. Rolf, appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much for joining me, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Always a treat there with Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper from wagertalk.com. Lots and lots of good insights there on the college football market. Very excited to get week one going here on Thursday night. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by fellow WagerTalk.com professional handicapper Brian Leonard, and then also Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review. We'll take a look at week four of the preseason, but mostly look ahead to the regular season with Joe there on that segment. Thursday, Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, we'll see what we have in store as I start looking for some different guests, because like I said, Brent from DSI, probably not able to join us again this week, should be on the program next week. Then, of course, next week we'll also be doing our Super Contest segment, so we'll be able to have that on our Friday editions of the show. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.